Hokie Pod on the Virginia Tech IMG Sports Network is brought to you by Virginia Farm Bureau Insurance. Get an online auto quote or connect with your local agent at vfbinsurance.com today. Here we go.
Touchdown, Virginia Tech Hokies!
How about the Hokie Nation?
Strowman all the way to the house!
Hard, smart, tough. Holy cow, is that this team or what?
It is picked up by Motua Puaka. Nothing but clean mountain air in front of him.
Coach, congratulations, man. What a way to start the season. Big stage, big game, two ranked teams, the rivalry renewed, and you get the job done. 31-24 goes down to the last play. Nothing to it, right?
Oh, my goodness. Where to start?
Welcome to Hokie Pod. I'm Andrew Allegretta.
And I'm Mike Burnup.
And I'm John Laser.
Coming up on today's show, offensive lineman Kyle Chung joins Hokie Pod. I talk with him and we'll break down the offense against West Virginia, plus what he thought about Josh Jackson's first game, and what Frank Beamer means to him and his father, Eugene, who was a part of Coach Beamer's very first recruiting class. Plus, we'll go inside the West Virginia win, star players, areas of concern, and a look ahead to Delaware. And a reminder, don't forget Tech Talk Live returns to the Virginia Tech IMG Sports Network on Monday, 7 p.m. with Coach Fuente. Virginia Tech Sports Today is in full swing Sunday mornings on Comcast Mid-Atlantic across the Commonwealth and WDBJ7 in Roanoke. And of course, our game broadcast on Saturday, 3:30 kickoff. I will be out in Hokie Village at 2 p.m. with the Kubota kickoff show. All right, guys. Tech was 0-3 in FedEx. Losses to Boise State, USC, and Cincinnati. No more. Tech was 0-10 to start seasons against ranked teams. No more. What were the top storylines the other night at FedEx?
Well, starting right there, you know, it's so difficult, I think, when you want to put historical importance on a coach and Justin Fuente in a program that was not a part of that. And we had that same conversation last year at Syracuse, and I said all the things that I'm going to say now, and I can crow a little bit because we had to eat crow after Syracuse because they came out and looked very much, Mikey, like they looked in the Carrier Dome in the Frank Beamer years. And it's not to indict Coach Beamer or anything that he didn't do, but it just doesn't carry over. It doesn't work that way, despite the fact that a couple of the players may have been involved or at least been associated with the program for some of those other wins. So it's irrelevant. We're going to get into West Virginia and how they won the football game, but FedEx Field was irrelevant. Bud Foster said that, and so was a neutral site opponent opening up. We'd never seen a program guided towards an opening game by Justin Fuente. Now we have, and the results were obviously impressive.
I thought the atmosphere was unbelievable up there. Tremendous crowd, and it was just it was electric. And for the Hokies to get the win like they did, going down to the last play was pretty amazing because there was no gas left in the tank of that defense. And we had talked about, you mentioned that Syracuse game, Lays, and they ran 100 plays. Well, what West Virginia had, 88? And you thought about, man, here are our fears. They're all right there in front of us. I mean, that's what we talked about the whole time. Lack of depth on the defensive line. Can they handle the stamina when a team's going to throw the ball as much as West Virginia does and spread you out? And so it was a great win. I thought Josh Jackson played phenomenal game, especially after he got going. I thought the turning point for him was the second quarter when the Hokies had three straight three and outs and then got the ball in good field position. And he threw that terrific pass to Cam Phillips and who somebody else caught another one. I forget who the other catch was, but he moved the ball right down the field and scored right before the half. I thought that was absolutely huge. I thought that the hidden yardage gets overlooked.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about the field position in that game, West Virginia never started beyond their own 27-yard line, and the Hokies had a clear advantage there, much shorter fields to work with. Oscar Bradburn, you know, averaged over almost 11 yards a punt better than his counterpart. That was a huge difference in the game. There was almost 50 yards in penalties different, and I think it was 93 yards in kickoffs. So the hidden yardage was huge, and people never talk about that.
Yeah, one aspect that I want to talk about with the hidden yardage, because I saw him right when he came off the field, and he was taking his failure or his perception of it exceptionally difficult, and that was place kicker Joey Sly, and rightfully so. He's got to make those kicks, particularly with the game on the line, and he has made those kicks. I mean, he's a guy that single-handedly, from that standpoint, won you the Pittsburgh game last year. We forget about Coach Beamer's final home game when he kept you in there with field goals through the overtime periods. But again, he's got to make those kicks. But to Mike's point, no, they never started beyond the 27-yard line. And Joey Sly, who led the country Missouri in touchback percentage last year was 1,000% in terms of touchbacks in this game. And that has to be noted because I thought, Mike, one of the turning point plays in the game was James Clark's kick return. Now, granted, there was a penalty on the end of it, but you were still going to have exceptional field position because their kickoff man didn't have the ability to get it to the end zone. He had to give it everything he had, which is why he kept hooking the ball and eventually, or on his first one, kicked one out of bounds. So, again, yes, we know Joey Sly needs to make those kicks. Joey knows he needs to make those kicks.
Yes.
I watched him kick about 250 balls in a row yesterday during practice, so he knows that. But at the same time, he was a valuable contributor to that game, as was, to your point, Oscar Bradburn, who I thought in his first game was unbelievable, Andrew, and I know you got to see him down on the sidelines a couple of times.
Yeah, what
did made it a little more staggering.
What did Coach Fuente tell you, Mike, after the game about Bradburn? Something about him, like, almost being surprised half a second that he needed to go into the game, something like that?
Well, they called for the punt team, and Oscar wasn't out there. He says, well, you know, you are an integral part of the punt team, don't you? And he kind of laughed about it. Yeah, Oscar, yeah, Roy! Yeah, but that was funny. Here's another funny story. So Sunday, what was it? We got back Monday afternoon,
yep.
Right? So I had to take something over to Coach Beamer. And so I'm out there on the front porch talking to him for a good while. He was the honorary captain and talked about him and what he was doing there and talked about Don Neal and seeing him and whatnot. So he told me two great stories. So he didn't go with the team. He didn't go with the team on the bus to the game. So he took a cab, right? So he can only get so close. As you know, the gridlock out there was just unbelievable. So Coach Beamer's stuck in that as well. And so he's telling me the story about he finally got there, and they could see the stadium in the distance, but the cab guy says, you know, hey, we can't go anywhere, right? So Coach says, how much do I owe you? And so Coach got out and started walking. So he had to walk to the game, right, to the stadium. He says fans from Virginia Tech, obviously they recognized him, right? So they're waving at him, coming by and taking pictures as he's trying to get to the stadium, you know. He's got a little panic mode because he's the honorary captain.
Yeah.
And the West Virginia people see him, and they're waving at him and holler at him. And he started cracking jokes. He said, I've never had this much trouble getting into a stadium in my life. So he was laughing about that. And then the other thing he was talking about, the great kickoff return that Clark had. He said, I wouldn't be surprised if they don't move the line back another 5 yards. He said, because kickers now are getting to the point where they're kicking everything back, and that is such an important play, a big play in a game, that I think they want to see more returns. And that he thinks they're going to move the line back and make that play be an integral part of the game. So that'll be fun to see how that comes out.
It'll be an interesting debate as to the swap between college and the NFL, because, of course, the NFL – under pressure said, we know that it's an important part of the game and we'd like to see more too, but it's also the most injury riddled play.
Yeah.
And that's why they moved it up, so pretty much every kickoff is a touchback. But I'm with you, Mike. I'd love to see more kickoffs because it's that third phase, and it won Tech the game. There's no doubt about that.
Interesting. Coach Beamer wants more kickoffs.
Kind of reminded me of that.
When he wants Beamer ball back.
No doubt.
Kind of reminded me when he had that band uniform on doing the commercial. Get in the stadium. And they lug him off.
Awesome. All of the Hokie fans out there, by the way, that struggled to get into FedEx Field, we feel you. We went through small hiccups, nothing like what the fans went through, but we feel you out there if you struggled with that.
You mean that mile and a half walk uphill and 80-some degrees?
Yeah, we feel you. We were with you. We walked a mile and a half from the gray lot. Johnny and Carter, who are members of our crew as our spotter and statistician, almost didn't make it. Carter had to go to a higher octave to scream at a parking attendant.
The stadium looked like a Tinker Toy building as far away as we were.
Yeah, the more I think about
Legos.
It,
Legos.
We're the ones that suffered because
we
walked in heat and you sat in your air-conditioned cars. You were fine.
Yeah, we had to
liquid refreshments.
And we had to lug the gear all the way around the stadium after the game.
All right. Let's talk Josh Jackson. So he finished with 235 passing yards, one touchdown through the air. He had 101 rushing yards, one touchdown on the ground. And one thing that you started to talk about, Mike, no turnovers whatsoever in this game for Josh Jackson, for the Virginia Tech offense. What impressed you the most about the way that this young man handled this stage?
The fact that he got 101 yards. If you would have told me before the game to rank that one Hokie was going to get 100 yards rushing, he would have been next to last, probably.
Yeah.
My peoples might have been right in front of him. But I would have to say, you know, Trayvon would be number one, McLeese would probably be number two. But not Josh. I mean, he just had not shown that He could run that fast, that far, and for him to have 101 yards is just amazing to me. But I thought, again, his ability, he got more comfortable as things went on. That 3-3-5 defense is a little bit of a tricky defense. It's kind of set up to control the spread offenses that you see. And so he really didn't know where the blitzes are going to be coming from and how the stunts were going to work. So I thought in that regard he did a really good job. I mean, the clock in his head was ticking. He threw some balls away. I thought Brad Cornelison was smart in getting him out of the pocket. You know, he rolled. He didn't sit back there like a statue. You know, he rolled out some, so he changed the launching point some. And so I thought it was a great game plan, and I thought he got more and more comfortable, and I thought really after that second quarter, at the end of there, when he took him down and scored, he was just dynamite, especially later in the game.
Yeah, I thought his patience and recognition were off the charts, and the patience part, to Mike's point, he didn't make any gigantic mistakes, most noteworthy in a difficult area of the field, but really in the entire game. And it's not always what you want to see on third down, the ball being flung over one of the benches and just getting it to Oscar Bradburn and playing field position, but he did that a couple of times. And then I thought as the game went on, you could see him making in-game adjustments that I don't think a lot of quarterbacks of his experience level could do, and he recognized what Mike was just talking about, that defense, when they split those defensive linemen, and you know that pressure's coming from the outside, and that's what we saw Tony Gibson doing early in the game. He said, you're not going to get lateral on me, and we saw Josh spike a couple of throws under duress on designed rolls, and we saw some of those RPO options to the outside not go so well for Tech, and then you saw the adjustment, whether that was from Brad Cornelison or Josh Jackson picking it up, but that's what that 46-yard run was. There's nothing in the middle. There's nothing in the middle, and then later in the game, when he really needed to, I thought he climbed the pocket exceptionally well and realized that pressure was coming from around him, creating some sort of a bubble, and he stepped right up and made some nice on-time, on-the-money throws. So I thought it was a great in-game evolution from the beginning to the end, and then we saw some of the physical attributes that we talked about. That 46-yard run really wasn't an example of those physical attributes. It was just his read of what was going to be open, and he took advantage. But there was a 13-yard run that he had, I believe it was on 2nd and 10, or maybe a 12-yard run, that was Jerod Evans-like, where it was meandering, and he made a couple of cuts, and he made a couple men miss, and that was a huge pickup for Virginia Tech. So again, the patience and his ability to read and also evolve and take what he was given aerially, I thought were again well beyond what I was expecting.
The other thing that was impressive, not necessarily about him but the team in general, was the fact that when the game was on the line in that fourth quarter, which took like an hour,
yeah,
that the Hokies had the ball for almost 10 minutes in that quarter, 9:42, I think it was. And you think about that, and it's like, man, that game was going back and forth, nip and tuck. And the Hokies, that was the only quarter that they won time of possession. Remember, the second quarter was kind of ugly. The three and outs that they had in West Virginia kind of got the momentum. So getting the score right before the half was absolutely huge. But he just got more comfortable. And then the ball security is so big, and not turning it over in a game like that on a big stage was key.
You know, I'm having a good time getting to know Josh's personality because we've done a few interviews with him during the fall. He gets up on the press conference podium and he talks, and he seems like a fairly quiet and reserved guy. But being down on the sideline, I can tell you there's plenty of emotion. Talk about him after he scored. He nearly knocked over Ben Hilgard, the strength and conditioning coach. Plenty of emotion there. He's as focused of a quarterback on that sideline as I've seen over the past couple of years between Michael Brewer and Jerod Evans. He was locked in from start to finish. So if there was, from a fan's perspective, any concern maybe about his personality just because he comes across so laid back, he's locked in down on the sideline, and he's a fun guy to watch in that regard.
I think part of that goes back to the way he was raised, and he's been around football all his life, and you know, being on the sideline last year and being a part of that, I think all that adds to the fact that, yeah, he's the real deal, and that's why they named him the starter as early as possible, and I think they knew what they had in Josh.
All right, so that's a lot of the good stuff. Let's talk about some of the concerns. I think one thing that jumped out when you take a look at the stats, it was the third down. So you talk about not controlling time of possession, Mike, and didn't get it until the fourth quarter. One reason, Tech was 3-for-15 on third down, just 20%. Anything jump out to you about the way Virginia Tech handled the third down situations? Because I can tell you in the locker room, Brad Cornelison told the quarterbacks, I've got to do a better job for you guys when it comes to third downs.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was going to say. You could see that conservatism where you used to see, and I think you will again, including this week, that fact that you were forcing defenses to defend a number of different things on those third down plays. And I'm not questioning the play calling. I'm really not. It's just that they went back to what they had had success with, and I think it was easier for West Virginia to read on a couple of those occasions. The Peoples one where he came up short was a play that had worked a couple of times already on that drive. So you give Tony Gibson a lot of that credit too. You know, I mean, when there's something that's obviously a miss with his defense, he's going to fix that quickly. But yeah, I think a lot of that had to do with it in the first half. And then in the second half, on some critical third downs, we did see Tech convert, and you saw Josh, I think, with a little more freedom to make some reads in the passing game, and that went well. So I think that evolved, like everything else did, to the most impressive series of the game, which was middle of the third through the fourth quarter. And that's a positive, going back to some of the short yardage run plays that didn't work for the Hokies. Some of that, I think, is on Josh. Some of it's on the plays that were called, and some of it, Mike, is on the offensive line, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, and I think you give a lot of credit to West Virginia's defense. I mean, they know the money down, just like Bud Foster does, and Bud did a good job on third down, and Gibby did a good job for them on third down. So, you know, I think the pass to Cam Phillips, you know, needs to be – you can't settle for field goals there. I mean, when he's down at the one-yard line and you got a first and goal, you can't – implode down there and get a penalty for a false start and stuff like that. Those are things that you got to kind of shore up. Not that that's all on Josh, but it's on kind of the offense in general, and maybe in particular the offensive line. Because when you got a first and goal, you got to punch it in. The difference in 7 and 3 there is what, 4?
I mean, that could pretty good, buddy. Yeah. Pretty good. Yeah,
it took me a while to figure
that
out.
That quicker than that one play drive summary during the game on the Phillips touchdown.
Like, man,
but I think Andrew, to expand on that a little bit, is the fact that you're not firing on all cylinders. We're talking about all the positives, and there were plenty. And I don't want to be the rain cloud on a rainy day here in Blacksburg, but to have success on third down, to have success in general for this team and this offense going forward, Josh Jackson needs to show that recognition and the ability to run this offense faster, because that's the one thing that we saw particularly in the first half was the caution and the patience, and we just cited that as a positive, and it was in that scenario. But this offense is meant to go at a higher speed, and that oftentimes put defenses back on their heels on third down. They don't have as much time to think about it and go back through their catalog of what you beat them with already, and you can get some of those easy third and short conversions, and that'll come. Again, you know, you wouldn't want the whole ball of wax on the opening week, and we certainly didn't get it.
Well, I mean, the playbook will get opened up more and more each week, and, you know, the red zone, they got to be better. I think last year they were 88% in the red zone and 60% maybe with touchdowns. So when you look at it the other day, they were 4 out of 6, and you missed 2 field goals. I mean, you got to convert when you're in the red zone and do a better job there. The field gets shrunk, but still, you got to do better than 4 for 6 and obviously 3 out of 6 touchdowns.
So. All right, so the position that we talked about the most when it came to the offense this offseason was the wide receivers. Did we learn anything new? First off, Cam Phillips, fantastic game. He played great. But past Cam, did we learn anything new?
Yeah, we learned who Justin Fuente and Brad Cornelison are the most comfortable with right now, and that's Sean Savoy. You know, we went into the game talking about, will it be Hezekiah Grimsley or will it be Sean Savoy? Those are the two guys that we think we're teetering back and forth between, and Savoy is clearly the guy who got the most snaps offensively, I believe, behind Cam Phillips. Did we learn a ton about the way those guys are going to step up? No, and that's a credit to Cam Phillips that he was able to do what he was able to do. I really liked what I saw from Chris Cunningham. I think he's going to be a part of it. We learned that Dalton Keene is a heck of a pass protector and can block and help in the run game maybe more physically than we thought he could. He's probably telling the coaches, hey guys, I came here to be like Burnup and catch a few passes, because I don't think he was targeted once in that game. That'll change going forward. But we learned that the freshmen are intelligent enough and, like Josh Jackson, their leader, patient enough to realize what the game plan was, and that was to exploit some physical advantages you had with Cam Phillips. But we didn't learn a ton in terms of who's going to be impact in terms of their number of receptions going forward.
I thought Cam didn't get double teamed as much as I thought he would. I thought he was awesome. When you think about it, he didn't practice that much in August. He kept having these nagging injury. His hip was bothering him a little bit and whatnot. So I even talked to him after the game. He said he's still not 100%. So you think about that, how good he played and not quite at 100%. And as hot as it was, he wasn't cramping up. I mean, he took care of his body as best he could. So he was great. And then I think you just see the lack of depth there. You know, I don't think Clark was targeted one time. And so there's not a lot of depth at the wide receiver spot. That will continue to work on it. And, you know, the game's coming up here against teams that aren't as talented as West Virginia. You may see more of those guys get in and play, and that's where you try to make a name for yourself.
And to your point, John, sorry, but not only did you learn that Sean Savoy is somebody that Justin Fuente has confidence in, but Hezekiah Grimsley needs to grow that confidence because he didn't see very many snaps, and neither did Phil Patterson, and neither did a lot of these guys that were potentially going to be 6th, 7th, 8th down there.
No, you're absolutely right. I don't know if Patterson saw any snaps, to be honest with you. I don't recall. And the guy that was glaring for me that didn't see a lot of snaps was Eric Kuma, because you've got to establish at some point you're going to run into a physical matchup where you need a guy of his physical stature to be that vertical threat, because he's a lot bigger than even Cam Phillips is. And I think you're going to see that over the next 3 weeks. I think ideally you're going to get leads on these teams. I'm not saying that that is presumed or assumed or whatever the case may be, but that's the ideal scenario. You were able to do that a little bit in September last year, and I think that really helped down the road, and you're going to need to do that. But even if you don't have big leads, you're going to have to try to find a way to work these guys in, because that was the greatest thing that you won, with all due respect to the Black Diamond Trophy. You won these next 3 weeks because there are some areas in which you need to grow, and that is one of them before you get into your ACC season.
Congratulations to Cam Phillips, by the way, who passed Danny Cole for most career catches, third all-time by himself with 172. Danny Cole had 165. As it was pointed out to me on Twitter, and then several times after, Danny Cole really had 166. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, officially 165, and passed Antonio Freeman for most, fifth most career yards at Virginia Tech with 2,201. Antonio Freeman had 2,200 flat. All right, let's move on to the defensive side, which, look, did what it needed to do. 24 points on the board is good. About 600 yards, something that Bud Foster will look at. But the biggest thing, Mike, we talked about it in the pregame. We talked about it on this podcast for both of you guys. The defensive line is thin, and you saw it in a big way. What do we think?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And thin is apropos, because you could just see the difference in bulk or lack thereof when that unit came in. And, you know, it's younger guys that haven't physically blossomed, and not everyone's going to be the body type of Tim Settle, and that's probably a good thing. But there was a noticeable difference when they came in the game, and it was exceptionally noticeable in terms of the lack of pressure that they were able to get on Will Grier. Now, I think the ends in terms of that second group are well ahead of the tackles right now, Mike, but I don't know what you do in season. You were mentioning some of the ways that Bud Foster can provide support when they're there from other levels of the defense, and you're not always going to be playing Will Grier, by the way, who can light you up, and you can probably take more liberties with leaving some people in single coverage. But, it was definitely one of the glaring things that came out of that game.
Well, that's what we talked about. That was our concern, and that's what makes the back end, the linebackers and defensive backs, almost look human. Because if you don't get a pass rush, and we saw time after time, I mean, how long did Grier have to sit back there and throw? Now, I'll say this, you know, when you're doing your prep for the game and you're talking to their people, they were oohing and aahing over him. They knew he was good. I think they didn't lead on to maybe how good he was, but he's a heck of a quarterback. He's very accurate, got a very live arm. He can fit the ball in windows. You saw those posts that he threw that are like NFL Sunday kind of throws. The fact that he was able to hit the sideline guys in stride a couple times when the coverage is not bad, but, you know, it takes a great pass and a great catch to make that work, and he was able to make those too. So, but that line is it's thin. I mean, you take a Tim Settle that's 330 pounds and goes from 25 plays last year max probably to whatever he ran out of that 89, 50, 60, 70, I'm not sure. But that is asking a lot on a hot, humid day when guys are cramping up. And he gave credit to Ricky Walker for being the guy to kind of push him along. Man, you got to go. And so I thought Walker did a really good job. He can stuff the run inside there. But they got to get more depth some way, somehow, whether it's moving Mahota down. Maybe it's taking a look at some of those guys on offense that are absolutely huge on the offensive line. They're sitting there doing nothing except, you know, picking their nose during the game. Like, maybe try them on defense.
There's some of that, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, so you got to do something, because that was obviously a high-powered offense. Got almost 600 yards, and I think that was the most since LSU in 2007 at a defense that Bud's defense had given up. So that's a lot of yards, but the key was they only gave up 24 points, and they did a really good job on the money down.
Yeah, and I think that that has been exposed. And again, you buy yourself the time in these weeks to try to figure some things out. But I also will say that I think that offense from West Virginia was just about the worst matchup that you could face where you were personnel-wise in terms of the pace at which they play, 88 plays, almost 90, and with the big-arm quarterback who, oh, by the way, has a little mobility to him as well. Mike, I don't know if you agree with this comparison, but to me, he looked like Brad Kaya with a little mobility, and that looked like Miami, but sped up. And obviously, we're not giving Tech's defense enough credit for what they did do in this game, because this podcast is about where do you go going forward. But, you know, again, you're not going to maybe face another quarterback of that caliber this season. You know, I'm not saying that you won't. You might, but you might not. And that's how good Will Grier was. And that system, again, was kind of kryptonite to your four-man front that you have. It's not always going to be that frenetic for these guys, but that doesn't mean you don't need to find answers.
Yeah, they'll, you know, Bud's good at it. He'll find some answers from some way, somehow, but you know, even that 30 package when he was rushing three sometimes, which really evolved into rushing two because you wanted to kind of keep an eye on where Grier was. Man, I tell you what, that gives you a lot of time to throw, and they've obviously got to clear that up a little bit. But that was – Grier was good. He was better than I thought he was going to be, and he's got a great future ahead of him, and I'm glad he won't be playing when we have this next game against the Mountaineers in, what, 21?
Some of the Mountaineers people were down on Will Grier after the game, which – was odd. I guess they had just lost, so they were grumbling.
Some of our folks were down on Joey Sly, forgetting about the fact that he's five field goals away from having the scoring record or the field goal record here, and I understand that. That's the frustration of losing the football game. They'll realize in the weeks to come how special he is.
By the way, with the defensive line, here's what's concerning to me, though. You can only find so many answers, right? You can't invent people out of thin air. They're not just going to show up, so it's going to have to be the creativity to figure out how to mask it, not necessarily going, oh, this guy who's back there is going to be good enough to fix the issue completely.
Well, some of the guys, the backups, just aren't very big.
Yeah.
I mean, Woody Barron, he could get away with that at 260, but you got other guys out there on the depth chart that just that are in that weight range and don't have the experience as redshirt freshmen. You're asking them to do an awful lot when you're going up against 300-pound offensive linemen. So it's going to be a work in progress like we thought about. I don't envy Charlie Wiles for having to come up with answers and Bud, but, you know, you got to get creative. You got to walk those linebackers up on the line a little bit, and you got to try to crowd the box because you got to try to shut the run down. And, again, how many times do we say that back seven's only as good as that front four?
Moving on, Delaware coming up. It's a short week, Saturday, 3:30. Don't forget our Virginia Tech IMG Sports Network broadcast start at 2. I'll be out in Hokie Village again at 2 o'clock with that one. Short week, though. How do these guys adjust? What's the mentality if you're Coach Fuente? What's your approach this week coming off the short week to make sure the guys are feeling good and ready to go?
Well, I think Coach Fuente does an exceptional job, along with his staff, of managing time. And he's not a guy that's going to say, we're going to get fired up for this by doing a full 24-period practice and we are going to run our legs back in shape. I think he's wise enough to realize that from a preparation standpoint, you're there. And this is going to be about maintenance this week, Mike. And I know he had a certain length practice scheduled yesterday, which would have been Tuesday, that he shortened a little bit because he took the temperature of his team and realized that their legs were probably a little more gone than we anticipated coming off that West Virginia game. So I have every confidence that he'll have the schedule tweaked to the right place, and they'll know the scheme well enough from Delaware. That'll probably be getting the pads off a little bit for these guys and a little extra rest. But if you can't get jacked up, and Mikey knows this, getting into Lane Stadium for a lot of these guys for the first time, then you got an issue. So maybe the problem lies next week on the road against East Carolina, but we'll talk about that next week.
Especially if Irma is down there.
Yeah.
Like the last time
because you're going on the roof. You're going on the roof and you're going on the sideline. I'm going to be in that small radio booth by myself.
You and Carter. You know, it's the tough part about this trip was, I mean, they win the game, but then you got to bus back. I mean, they literally got back at 5:30 in the morning on Monday. Monday was technically their day off, but half of, you know, a third of the day, whatever, they spent in the bus. So, man, as a player, you are dragging Heine, I'm telling you. And the last thing you want to do is get out there on that field and do anything. I mean, you're ready to just be – because, I mean, think about it. That as physical a game as that, I mean, you practice like max at 2 hours, and you're out there almost 4 hours for a game, and you're just pounding each other into submission and so tired and drained and it takes a while. So clearly you got to get your legs back, and they've been smart about that, and you just limit the physical part of practice and do a lot of mental stuff. So they'll get the job done and try to get their legs back, and obviously playing at home will be a big difference because it's supposed to be a beautiful day on Saturday.
And one thing we didn't talk about, which I'm sure the sports training staff, sports medicine staff will get taken care of, was we saw a ton of cramps. Ooh. And a lot of guys getting banged up. So there's going to be some sore bodies out there on Saturday and some sore bodies this week that they're just going to have to grind through.
That's all you can do. I mean, you just grind through it and just get her done, try to hydrate yourself. That's a perfect example of why they tell you, you know, take that jug of water, but don't let's carry it around. Drink the daggone thing. You know, try to keep yourself hydrated, or else you're going to have like a nurse's station in there at halftime and get IVs instead of like sodas or whatever.
Well, that's what Terrell Edmonds was in the locker room getting. He was getting an IV on that final drive. He did come back out. He did see the final drive as Divine Diablo was out there playing in place of him, but that's what Terrell had to do, go back to the locker room and get an IV in that game.
Yeah, it's amazing how fast an IV works.
Yeah. John, a couple of top of the storyline things that we need to know about for Delaware. What should Hokie fans pay attention to for the Blue Hens coming up on Saturday?
Well, this is a very proud FCS program and whatever, you know, 1AA back in the day, and this was a team that used to be used to contending at the national level, and they've fallen off from that for whatever reason for the last few years and haven't had a lot of success, not a winning season since 2013, and that's why they have a first-year head coach in Danny Rocco, who many people felt took a lateral, if not a slight down, move from University of Richmond, where he had a lot of success following Latrell Scott and Mike London. He's a coach that prides himself on defense and discipline, and that is what you're going to see from Delaware. It's going to be a team in Delaware that's physically overmatched by the Hokies on both lines, regardless of which line is in there for Virginia Tech. And you're going to see a team that really shouldn't be able to keep up with Tech in terms of either side of the ball. But with that said, it's not going to be a team that's going to come in here and shoot themselves in the foot. It's not going to be a team that comes in here that's scared of the environment. They've got 19 starters back. They have a lot of experience, not a ton of experience winning, but experience and in bigger stadiums, not quite this big. This will be the largest crowd that they've ever played in front of, topping a previous trip to Maryland. But this is not a walkover opponent. Yes, this is an opponent that you should beat, and if you play well, you should beat handily. But at the same time, it's not a team that you can just show up and walk over, because Danny Rocco is too good of a coach, and this team will be too ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, he'll get them fired up. He did a really good job the places that he's been before, and you know, he's been in this stadium before when he was at UVA in 2001, I think, to 2006. So I like what he's all about. He's a good coach. It's going to take him some time to get that program back to where it was in the Joe Flacco days when they were really, really talented. You know, the biggest difference is the lack of scholarships. I mean, you know, you're sitting there with 85 at this level at the FBS, and the FCS, you're at, what, 65, 66, or whatever it is. And so the difference is that you don't have as many great athletes. The bodies aren't as big, especially on the offensive the defensive line in the trenches where it matters. So that'll be a big difference when you look out there on Saturday. And, you know, their kids, again, will be playing in front of a huge crowd. But for them, that's great. That's like their Super Bowl. Man, we get to go to Virginia Tech and play the 18th-ranked team in the country. So you can't take anybody for granted. Their kids are on scholarship, too, and they'll play their fannies off. So it's just a matter of being ready to play and, you know, forget about West Virginia and let's go. And I think when you think about Coach Fu last year, they did a great job of having the kids focused for the most part. You know, there were some hiccups on the road, but they never lost two in a row, and they're coming off a great win, so I think they'll be ready to go.
And, Andrew, you're a former voice of the Charleston Southern Buccaneers like I am, and I remember back to 2008 when Danny Rocco was the head coach of the Liberty Flames, and we went up there on a day like today in Blacksburg where it rained all the way up on the drive. We got our fannies kicked 56-3. Danny Rocco was a little bit haughty about it after the game, and then we drove back 5 hours in the rain to Charleston, South Carolina. So we got Liberty last year, and come on, Foo, we're going to avenge this baby on
Saturday.
Sorry,
I missed that trip. Where was I?
You were here in year, oh, let's see, 28.
And I was there in 2010, and Liberty also kicked Charleston Southern's fanny that year. A long string of flame fanny kicking of the Bucks. Oh, the glory days, John.
Oh, they've turned
the glory days.
Glory days, do-do-do-do.
All right. Who wants to hear from Kyle Chung? Enjoyed my conversation with the offensive lineman for Virginia Tech. A lot of good stuff. First off, about what the adjustment has been like for him going from the inside part of the line to the right tackle. He had a pretty good game against West Virginia the other day. Plus, a little bit about his background. Of course, his father, an All-American here at Virginia Tech and part of Coach Beamer's very first recruiting class. So we recount the first time that Kyle Chung ever met Coach Beamer. It's after this. Hokie fans, get the StubHub app now, and not only will you find seats you'll love whenever you want, you'll also find the best seat for your buck when you sort by best value. StubHub, your ticket out, the official ticket marketplace of the Hokies. Kyle, thanks so much for talking with us. We appreciate it.
No problem. Glad to be here.
All right, so let's go back to the West Virginia game. What was Coach Fuente's overall assessment of the offense after the win at FedEx Field?
He said we did some things well, but we have a lot to improve on this upcoming week against Delaware. And we just got to keep chopping at the little things, just better tempo, better urgency, all that stuff.
All right, so let's go right down to the offensive line then. What was Vance Vice's message to you guys? Again, it seemed like we saw some pretty decent running lanes. McLeese had a touchdown. Josh Jackson had that big run. How did Vance Vice feel about things?
He felt pretty good. He was happy after the game. But again, I mean, it's never perfect. We always have something to improve on, so that's our goal for this week.
All right, did you have a best block in that game, Kyle?
I don't know specifically. I just remember on Josh's big run, I just remember looking behind me and he was cutting right behind me. So that was a pretty good feeling.
How about Deshaun McLeese's run? Because I believe that went off the right side, did it not?
It did. That was a good run by him. He broke a couple tackles and got in the end zone, so that was big time.
All right, so you've been here for a while. You've been able to see a handful of quarterbacks. Were you here for Logan Thomas, by the way?
I was. Yeah, I was here.
All right, so you've seen Logan, Michael Brewer. You saw Gerard Evans. How would you categorize Josh Jackson's ability to see a defense and make adjustments to put the offensive line in the best place for a play? After one game, plus you saw him in camp.
I was really impressed with what Josh did. He was doing it all camp and even in the springtime too, and during our summer walkthroughs and stuff. He has really good poise back there, and it's a good thing to have, knowing your guy quarterback back there can see stuff and make the changes you need to have a successful play.
Yeah, I was down there on the sideline for that West Virginia game, and it did seem like he was able to start stepping up. I'm sure he did it in practice, but step up in game situations as a leader. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you guys are kind of snapping to attention when he's starting to talk now? It seemed like Cam Phillips and maybe Josh Jackson were the guys that kind of grabbed people's attention on the sideline.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's our quarterback, so we got to listen to him. So he knows pretty much everything that's going on the field at all times, so we have to listen to him. You know, Cam's one of our leaders, Eric Gallo, Wyatt Teller, all those guys. We all listen to them once they talk.
What kind of adjustment is that for an offensive group? Because it was, a different guy last year, and then before that it was Michael Brewer that would do those things. How long does that take?
It doesn't take that long, honestly. We just protect, we block for whoever's back there, and then we hope for the best. We try our hardest and try to go 1-0 in each every play.
What's been the most difficult thing for you getting ready for this season? We just came from a press conference and somebody asked you about switching to the outside and how much space you have to play in at right tackle versus being a center or guard. How would you describe the whole camp and the new experiences that you've had?
Being an interior guy pretty much my whole career here, playing tackle is a little bit different. I haven't played in that much space since I played in tight end in high school, so it took a little adjustment at first, but I think I've got it down now. I was able to hold my own a bit against West Virginia. So, I just got to keep improving and then keep getting better each week.
Do you know how many snaps you played against West Virginia?
I think it was around 80-something. I don't know the exact number, but it was somewhere in the 80s.
Okay, so for you personally, that's clearly the most you've played in a game here at Virginia Tech, yes? Or
yeah.
Fairly close, I would assume.
Close, yeah.
What was that experience like? Did you have any new challenges, exhaustion, mental fatigue that you might have gone through that you had to adjust to? And how did you get yourself through a game like that, which was, I would assume, a fairly new experience for you?
Yeah, I started the Tennessee game last year. And then I just remember from that game, I got really, excited once the things started going well. And then I learned from that experience I needed to keep my composure throughout the whole game in order to play well. So I think that's the biggest thing that I was able to translate from my past experiences to this game, was to keep my composure and play every play just calm, cool, and collective, pretty much.
Yeah, I was going to say, I kind of thought about that. I know there's plenty of new guys on offense, especially with the wide receivers. Some turnover on the offensive line, but not a gigantic amount because you and Pfaff were both here last year. Do you feel like that Tennessee game may have helped you guys out in the long run? Obviously, we would like to go back and beat Tennessee from a season ago, but in the long run, you know, five fumbles against Tennessee, no turnovers against West Virginia. Penalties were a problem against Tennessee. They weren't. It's a big-time early season game. Did that help, do you think?
I think it did. I think it helped a lot. You know, having that learning experience against Tennessee last year, I think it taught us how to handle a big stage. And then that goes back, I mean, throughout our whole season last season, too. I mean, against Notre Dame in the bowl game, too, we were down. We kept cool and fought our way back. And I think that's a testament to what this team does in our training and everything we do is it keeps us level-headed and makes sure we are on the right path no matter what.
What's Coach Fuente's impact on that?
He has a huge impact. I mean, he, all throughout winter workouts, all throughout summer, he preaches that we, you know, do the right thing, do the little things right, and to make sure we just keep everything calm and never get too high or too low are his words. So I think with that in our heads, we are able to succeed better and have a better chance of winning games.
All right, so for you, Kyle, maybe the major storyline of your career has been the ups and downs that you felt personally with injuries. First off, how is your health going through camp? And we were talking before this. Generally speaking, you feel like you've been okay for more than a year now.
Yeah, I feel better than ever. I mean, I've been healthy now for 2 years, and I don't know, my body feels great.
For an athlete, I've talked with plenty of athletes that have missed time because of serious injuries or surgeries or whatever it happens to be. What is that overall experience? And help people understand kind of not just the physical challenges that you go through, but the mental challenges to stay with it and keep going and pushing forward.
It can get taxing. Being able to like keep your head in it mentally and take all those mental reps, is it gets pretty hard after a while, but having the right people around you, so having this staff and Coach Beamer's staff and our chaplain, Brother Dave, and all those guys just kind of help you out with the process makes it a whole lot easier.
Most people know that your father was an All-American here back in the late 80s, early 90s. What was his message to you during all of the times that you had ups and downs with injuries?
He said, keep your head down, keep on working, you know, rehab, do all that stuff, and you'll be back in no time. So, I mean, I listened to him, and here I am today.
All right, I want to ask you about your dad a little bit. Does he have a favorite Eugene Chung? Does he have a single favorite Tech memory that maybe he told you about growing up or at the times that you were getting recruited?
One of his memories he tells me is that there used to be like a big tower on the practice field, and Coach Gentry, our old strength coach, they would do like this rappelling competition or something, and he jumped off of it and then like caught himself at the very last second, and Coach Gentry and everybody was freaking out, and that's one of his like big favorite memories that he's had.
They need some belay practice if you've ever been rock climbing. We don't want that to happen to anybody, and I'm glad nothing serious happened. What does Coach Beamer mean to you and your family? Because obviously your dad would have been here at the very beginning of Coach Beamer's time.
Yeah, my dad was actually in Coach Beamer's first recruiting class. So Coach Beamer means the world to myself and my family. He gave my dad the opportunity to play here, and then me growing up, I always was a Virginia Tech fan. So being able to play for him under my first couple of years here was awesome and the best experience I could ask for.
Do you remember the first time that you met Coach Beamer?
Yeah. I met Coach Beamer. They were staying at a hotel. I'm from Jacksonville, Florida. And then that's where the Gator Bowl used to be in the ACC Championship. So they were staying at a hotel near my house. I remember me and my dad went down to the hotel, and I got to meet Coach Beamer and got to meet Tyrod Taylor and a bunch of the other guys. It was pretty cool experience.
All right, compare that, because your dad is a coach in the NFL, and I'm sure at times you've been able to float through camps and see some guys. Compare that experience to maybe some experiences you've had with the professional guys.
You know, that experience was a little bit more special just because I was so young and starstruck at the time. But there are times now when I go up to see my dad in Philadelphia and you know, some guys are there. I'm like, oh, that's Carson Wentz or whoever. It's pretty cool experience.
So you still get a little starstruck when it comes to the NFL guys, then?
A little bit. It depends who it is, because some of the guys I've played with now, kind of an older guy here, but yeah, some of the guys sometimes get a little bit starstruck.
All right, give me a favorite moment meeting an NFL player, whether it's recently or, I guess your dad started coaching back in 2010 or something along those lines. So maybe a moment that had your eyes the widest.
I think back there was like an NFLPA type of thing, and we were driving down, and I was playing Madden on my PSP or something, and my favorite team at the time was the Saints, and so Drew Brees happened to be at the same event, so I got to see him at the dinner like a couple hours later after the car ride. I thought that was pretty cool, and he signed the football for me. I still have it in my room to this day. It's pretty awesome.
That's incredible. Do you have a favorite NFL team?
I mean, my dad coaches for the Eagles, so I have to say Philadelphia, but my hometown team's the Jacksonville Jaguars, even though it's kind of rough to say, but, you know, that's my team.
Well, see, I was curious, maybe being from Florida, maybe you would be a Dolphins fan, and Drew Brees almost ended up with the Miami Dolphins, and that would have changed the course of that franchise forever. What's the best thing that your dad has? You talk about memorabilia. Best thing that your dad has in his memorabilia room back at home?
That's tough. I know that he has his Virginia Tech helmet, actually. I remember being a little kid and trying that on and wearing it around. He also has like a few game balls and stuff in there from whoever, like the Colts and a few other teams he's been with. It's pretty cool to see.
Did you have a favorite Virginia Tech moment growing up when you and your dad would gather around and watch the games on television or come to games? I don't know, how many games did you come to as a kid? Did something stand out?
I came to a few. I think my favorite moment was when my dad got inducted to the Hall of Fame here. That was my first Virginia Tech game I got to come to. And I just remember him walking onto the 50-yard line and the announcer saying his name and him like waving to the crowd and the crowd erupting. I thought that was pretty special.
Well, congratulations. We're glad that the family lineage has passed on to Kyle Chung. Thanks so much for your time.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
A big thanks to Kyle Chung for sitting down and talking with us on this week's Hokie Pod. Of course, coming up this weekend, Virginia Tech and Delaware, 3:30 inside Lane Stadium. You can listen across the Virginia Tech IMG Sports Network at 2 o'clock. And if you can't find a radio station, of course, you can listen online through the TuneIn radio app. And something brand new this week, guys, we're debuting Hokies Postgame Live on Facebook. Something brand new that we're doing. We're looking forward to it. John, you'll be talking with Coach Fuente online. Mike, you'll have it on the radio. So there's plenty of different ways to grab postgame commentary from Coach Fuente and players.
Yeah, this is our effort to evolve along with the way that media and coverage is being disseminated. And I did a teaser video with Coach Fuente for Hokies Postgame Live after the win against West Virginia, and I think that was up to like 40,000 views. So we feel like this is a medium that people are hungry for, and we're happy to be able to have the resources available to do that. But it'll start about 15 minutes following the conclusion of the game. Normally it'll be myself and Wes McElroy from our affiliate in Richmond, but this week we'll bring in Blacksburg's own Danny Noakes to fill in as Wes presides over the birth of his first child, which we felt was a reasonable excuse, I guess. But no, and then this the same Hall of Fame coverage that you're used to from Mikey on the radio side, and you got to hear after West Virginia, of course, will be there. So we love that, and I love the fact that you can listen to Mikey, and then you can go back, and this will basically be archived on Facebook, and you can hear that side of it too. So just adding, basically, to what we've always done.
And Mike, you'll be out in Hokie Village with me. Wes McElroy will join us going forward, but this week, hanging out in Hokie Village.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. It's always good to get out there and be amongst my people out there with seeing all the fans come out, because there's always stuff going on in the Hokie Village, and that's always a fun time, especially when the sun's out and it's going to be a beautiful day like the forecast is for now. So excited about that, and looking forward to the first home game. Boy, there's nothing like running through that tunnel as a player, and for those freshmen that hadn't played, man, their eyes are going to be opened up to Inner Sandman. That's going to be really, really cool, and should be a great, fun atmosphere.
A player or players to watch this Saturday for you guys, for Virginia Tech, or somebody the fans should pay attention to on Delaware?
Well, I'm going to go with Jalen Holston from Virginia Tech. He didn't get a carry at West Virginia, and he didn't necessarily need him to, because I thought that despite the fact that Josh Jackson led you in rushing yards, I liked what I saw from Deshaun McLeese. I liked what I saw from Stephen Peoples early, and we kind of know what Trayvon McMillan is. But again, ideally, you're going to be able to have a lead in this game and maybe debut some of these other guys that you weren't able to against West Virginia. Add Eric Kuma to that mix. You know, look for the running game from Delaware. They're going to try to establish that with Thomas Jefferson and Kareem Williams. They've got a quarterback that doesn't necessarily have a very accurate arm, at least historically through the air. So that's going to be interesting from the Delaware side, but I think the Hokies will be equal to that task.
It should be interesting. If this game goes like it's supposed to, the guy that'll be licking his chops to get in is going to be A.J. Bush, right? Because Josh Jackson, if he plays well like you expect him to, and this game goes according to plan, that they would want to get Josh out of there and get A.J. some reps. So I think you'll be surprised at how fast he is, how he can run, if he does get in there and the game goes like it's supposed to. So I'm looking forward to seeing him play and see what he's all about. And, you know, hopefully Josh can play well and just back up what he did last week, because, you know, it's easy to have a letdown. But, gosh, he was just so solid.
All right, so I am not going to pick a player because history says that player will not have
one.
A great game. So I'm not going to curse anybody or jinx anybody. And I also don't want to end the podcast on a downer, but something that everybody's going to be focused on in the coming days. Sports will take a back seat. A handful of games have been canceled because of the hurricane that's moving towards South Florida. The Dolphins game with the Bucs has already been canceled for this week. Miami's game, where they were supposed to go to Arkansas, has already been canceled. And I know there's a ton of Hokies down there in South Florida. Just our thoughts, Hokie Nation, is with everybody down in South Florida that will be dealing with this, not just this weekend, but moving forward.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that I know have property down there. I've got an ex-teammate that lives down there, several that live down there in the South Florida area and all the way up through there, the whole state. So, yeah, and I've got property in Destin, which looks like now it may be spared, but the uncertainty and the eeriness you get over a storm of that magnitude coming, man, it is scary, because right now it's got 185 mile an hour winds. It's the most I guess that they've ever had in a storm in the Atlantic. So it's scary, and I guess we certainly hope it stays as far away as possible and does as little damage as possible. Maybe somehow, some way, it'll lose some of its intensity, because it's a big one.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think the silver lining of what we just saw with the effects of Hurricane Harvey was the coming together of folks and fan bases, not that that's even relevant, but every area of our country. And I think that the thing that we can say to the assurance of the people in South Florida is that that aid will continue. And I know Buzz Williams was working on some things along with some of the other coaches here at Virginia Tech to send aid to Harvey. I can only imagine that they will view this in the exact same light, if not even more heightened, because it looks like the conditions from Irma are going to even be more catastrophic. So help will be coming from Blacksburg, and I have no doubt that will extend to Charlottesville and everywhere else in Virginia and throughout the great country. So not alone, obviously.
No doubt. However this turns out, plenty of people will have South Florida's back, just like they did Houston. Hokie fans out there, enjoy the game on Saturday. Delaware and Virginia Tech from Lane Stadium at 3:30. Listen across the Virginia Tech IMG Sports Network starting at 2:00.